Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Hi guys, and welcome to yet another episode of Textory. Grab some hot tea because it's already tea season, which I'm really excited about. You know, I love some fall slash autumn aesthetic, so do that. And when you do that, you can also go and check out patreon.com/textory if you want to support the podcast and make sure it's coming out still. Anyway, I'm really excited about today's episode because we are moving outside of Europe. As you probably noticed, most of my texts are focused on European slash Western slash American culture. And the reason for that is really, really simple, which is the language barrier. I find it easiest to find texts in English, which I can understand, or in Polish, that are obviously describing eras and cultural circles that are Western. And that's just a fact. My language knowledge is not that great. And even though I could use Google Translate for some of the texts, I'd rather not do that. So the only times I'm able to deal with texts from other cultural circles is because someone translated them to English or Polish first. Today's text is one of those things where it used to be a different language and now it's translated to English. That's why I can actually include it in the podcast. And we are moving to Japan today, and we are moving way back with our time machine. I don't think we've ever on this podcast had a text that old, which is double exciting. So today's text is a diary, and it's a diary that was written in 11th century. Yes, 11th century. And the author, unfortunately, remains anonymous because in the Heian period, women's names generally weren't recorded. And it was a custom to avoid some juju being made on your name. Basically, they believed that if someone knows your name, that's enough to do some like black magic on it. So that's a bit sad because if you were getting published as a woman, you were doing so anonymously. So we don't know the name of the lady who wrote this diary. The diary is commonly called the Sarashina Diary, but it's not, obviously not the actual name. And then her name is referred to as Sugawara no Takasue no Musume, but it's literally translated as daughter of Sugawara no Takasue. So it's not her actual name, obviously. And we're going to stick with Lady Sarashina, which is a name that was given to her by one of the translators. So that obviously also doesn't have anything to do with her actual name. She was born in 2008, and she was the daughter, as I mentioned, of Sugawara no Takasue, who later became the governor of Kazusa and Hitachi provinces. And what's really cool is that her aunt was also a poet and a writer, so it seems like it was a family affair in some way. And this diary is not just a diary. It was common to write diaries that featured a lot of poetry. It was a very popular genre that was called Nikibungaku. It basically meant poetic diaries. And Lady Sarashina wanted to write something that will basically bring her family honor and potentially fame, because it has been the case with a lot of women's diaries at the time. So she recorded her life from when she was 12 up until her 50s. I don't think she wrote when she was 12, but she wrote about this time later on. Unfortunately, we don't actually have the original copy of the diaries. We don't even have the diaries as they were first published. We have a 13th century transcript that was made also using another copy, so it's a bit complicated. We don't really have like the OG text. And then we're obviously reading a translation, and it's a translation from 1920, which is also not ideal. But I think it's still fascinating, so let's just jump right in. I was brought up in a distant province, which lies farther than the farthest end of the Eastern Road. I am ashamed to think that inhabitants of the royal city will think me an uncultured girl. Somehow I came to know that there are such things as romances in the world, and I wished to read them. When there was nothing to do by day or at night, one tale or another was told me by my elder sister or stepmother, and I heard several chapters about the shining Prince Genji. My longing for such stories increased, but how could they recite them all from memory? I became very restless and got an image of Yakushi Buddha made as large as myself. When I was alone, I washed my hands and went secretly before the altar and prayed to him with all my life, bowing my head down to the floor. Please let me go to the royal city. There I can find many tales. Let me read all of them. I think it's really cute how she was like the original book talk girly. I think she would absolutely love romanticy. Because romances and all these stories that captivated her so much, they were basically what they are now, entertainment. And obviously there was a lot of artistry to them as well. But at her ripe age of 12, which is the age she was when she's describing this, I don't think she was that interested in the artistry. I think she was mostly interested in fantasizing about beautiful princes. So then some years pass and she describes many journeys and she describes moving around a lot. And she's throughout that time always dreaming about all the romances that she's read and how many more she can get her hands on. And then she somehow ends up at court. A person, and then it says in the brackets, that is the Princess Yuko, daughter of the Emperor Toshiyaku, who had heard about me through a distant relative, called me to her, saying it would be better to be with her than passing idle lonely days. My old-fashioned parents thought the court life would be very unpleasant and wanted me to pass my time at home. But others said, people nowadays go out as ladies-in-waiting at the court, and then fortunate opportunities for marriage are naturally numerous. Why not try it? So at the age of 26, I was sent to the court against my will. It's interesting how she, as a child, was fantasizing about going to court, but when she was actually a grown-up, probably a little more knowledgeable about what goes on at court and what sort of life that is, she didn't want to go anymore. And it's either that or she just wanted to follow her parents' will, but I think she just probably was afraid of the change of the lifestyle that it would bring. So then she describes her first night at court. I went for one night the first time. I was dressed in an eightfold uchigi of deep and pale chrysanthemum colors, and over it I wore the outer flowing robe of deep red silk. Love when people include descriptions of their outfits in diaries. I absolutely love that. Uchigi is this beautiful robe with really wide sleeves and just a lot of fabric is involved. As she says, it's like eightfold. As I have said before, my mind was absorbed in romances, and I had no important relatives from whom I could learn distinguished manners or court customs. So except from the romances, I could not know them. I had always been in the shadow of the antiquated parents, and had been accustomed not to go out but to see moon and flowers. So when I left home, I felt as if I were not I, nor was it the real world to which I was going. It must have really felt otherworldly to enter a royal palace or royal court at the time. I mean, she was already quite well off. Let's just say that. She was already rich and she was probably already living in beautiful conditions. But the change of the level of that opulence must have been incredible. I felt awkward in court in everything I did. And I thought it sad, but there was no use in complaining. I remembered with grief my nieces who had lost their mother and had been cared for by me alone, even sleeping at night, one on either side of me. It's always descriptions like that that really get me, because it doesn't matter if this happened in 11th century. If you leave your home and go to a new place, you're gonna be homesick, you're gonna miss your family, you're gonna think really fondly of the ones you left behind, and it's really, really sweet. Days were spent in musing with a vacant mind. I felt as if someone were always spying upon me, and I was embarrassed. After 10 days or so, I got to leave to go out. Father and mother were waiting for me with a comfortable fire in a brazier. Seeing me getting out of my palanquin, my nieces said, "When you were with us, people came to see us, but now no one's voice is heard. No one's shadow falls before the house. We are very low-spirited. What can you do for us who must pass days like this?" It was pitiful to see them cry when they said it. The next morning, they sat before me saying, "As you are here, many persons are coming and going. It seems livelier." Tears came to my eyes to think what virtue I could have that my little nieces made so much of me. In the finishing month, I went again to the court. A room was assigned for my use. I went to the princess's apartment every night and lay down among unknown persons, so I could not sleep at all. It's interesting that she got her own room, but then she had to sleep with the princess, I'm assuming to keep her company at night. Like, not in that way, just like making sure she's safe.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
I was bashful and timid and wept in secret. In the morning, I retired while it was still dark and passed the days in longing for home, where my old and weak parents, making much of me, relied upon me as if I were worthy of it. I yearned for them and felt very lonely. Unfortunate, deplorable and helpless mind. That was graven into my thought, and although I had to perform my duty faithfully, I could not always wait upon the princess. She seemed not to guess what was in my heart, and attributing it only to shyness, favored me by summoning me often from among the other ladies. She used to say, "Call the younger ladies," and I was dragged out in spite of myself. The friendships of members of the royal families and their ladies-in-waiting must have been so weird, because how can you be friends with someone who's also your servant? And it's double weird because it's not like it's your maid who clearly is of like lower social status. It's a person that's also born an aristocrat. It's a person that was raised similarly to you. It's a person that you probably have a lot in common with. And it's definitely a person that was educated and is just interesting to talk to. So I think it's weird. It must have been really weird when you were becoming friends with a princess or a queen, knowing full well she could sentence you to death at the same time. So like, try being honest with her. Try telling her your deepest thoughts. Try giving her advice. Like, can you imagine? having like a girly talk with your bestie where you're like, you know what? I don't really like him. Like, maybe you should just not go on that date. And then that person is like, what did you just say to me? It must have been so odd. And that was probably the dynamic at every court, every royal court ever in history. Those who were familiar with the court life seemed to be at home there, but I, who was not very young, yet did not wish to be counted among the elderly, was rather neglected and made to usher guests. It's funny because she was probably still in her 20s as she's describing this, so being counted among the elderly in your 20s is like bizarre, but she probably just means that she was not like the youngest there. I'm assuming there were like teenagers at court. However, I did not expect too much of court life and had no envy for those who were more graceful than I. This, on the contrary, set me at ease, and I, from time to time, presented myself before the princess and talked only with congenial friends about lovely things. Even on smile-presenting, interesting occasions, I shrank from intruding and becoming too popular, and did not go far into most things. Sleeping one night before the princess, I was awakened by cries and fluttering noises from the waterfall in the pond. My companions passed their leisure time in talking over romances with the door open, which separated our rooms. And they often called back one who had gone to the princess's apartment. She sent word once, I will go if I must. I'm a little confused about this passage, but let's move on. She talks about composing poems and how it was a popular pastime. In this way, we passed the hours talking idly. Afterwards, this lady separated from the court and left us. The ladies who are charged with the duty of introducing the court nobles seem to have been fixed upon, and nobody notices whether simple-hearted countrywomen like me exist or not. On a very dark night, in the beginning of the God's absent month, so, which funnily enough is apparently around November, which makes a bit of sense, when sweet-voiced reciters were to read sutras throughout the night, another lady and I went out towards the entrance door of the audience room to listen to it, and after talking fell asleep, listening, leaning. When I noticed a gentleman had come to be received in audience by the princess. It is awkward to run away to our apartment to escape him. We will remain here. Let it be as it will. So said my companion, and I sat beside her listening. He spoke gently and quietly. There was nothing about him to be regretted. Who is the other lady? He asked of my friend. He said nothing rude or amorous like other men, but talked delicately of the sad, sweet things of the world. And many a phrase of his with a strange power enticed me into conversation. He wondered that there should have been in the court one who was a stranger to him, and did not seem inclined to go away soon. There was no starlight, and a gentle shower fell in the darkness. How lovely was its sound on the leaves! The more deeply beautiful is the night, he said, the full moonlight would be too dazzling. With these words, he departed, and I thought he could not have known who I was. That's some ancient Japanese riz, my guys. Several things to unpack here. First of all, the awkwardness of not wanting to talk to a guy is apparently as old as time itself. The annoying guys that will talk weird things to you are apparently also a norm in 11th century, because she says he said nothing rude or amorous like other men. So this poor lady probably had to listen to some pretty awful stuff that was being said to her. And then him saying, the more deeply beautiful is the night, the full moonlight would be too dazzling. And then just departing is honestly a boss move. Like, you can tell he was experienced in rizzing up the Japanese court ladies, that's for sure. In the 8th month of the next year, so that happened in 1043 apparently. So she was about 35 at the time, which seems quite old to be a court lady and unmarried at the time, but maybe that was the norm. I'm actually not well-versed in Japanese court customs. We went again to the imperial palace, and there was in the court an entertainment throughout the night. I did not know that he was present at it, and I passed that night in my own room. When I looked out in early morning, opening the sliding doors on the corridor, I saw the morning moon very faint and beautiful. I heard footsteps and people approached, some reciting sutras. She mentions reciting sutras a lot. Sutras were basically like aphorisms. So it just seems funny to me that they were like spitting out wisdom randomly as they were talking. Or like you would pass someone in the corridor and they would just like spit out some wisdom to you. It seems very performative in a way, I have to say. But at the same time, I mean, everything about the court was poetic and artistic, and it kind of makes sense. But at the same time, I just, like, imagine waking up, opening the door to your room, and someone's out there just like reciting full-on poetry to you. Like, that's hilarious. One of them came to the entrance and addressed me. I replied, and he, suddenly remembering, exclaimed, "That night of softly falling rain, I do not forget, even for a moment. I yearn for it." Oh my god! Like, who is this Japanese Mr. Darcy? That's so cute! That evening, after I had gone to my room, my companion came in to tell me that he had replied to my poem. So they were basically flirting in the way of swapping poetry. So they would either recite or just freestyle pieces of poetry, and you could say something and then the other person had to engage with it by coming up with a reply. So it was very much this back and forth situation. So she apparently told him a poem and then he came back and he replied, "If there be such a tranquil night as that of the rain, I should like in some way to make you listen to my lute, playing all the songs I can remember." No, why does it remind me of all the Kens and Barbie playing guitar? Why does it sound like your typical bro who's just like, "You know, like, I've been writing some music, actually. If you want to hang out sometime, I can, like, play it to you." But then she's down bad because she's like, "I wanted to hear it and waited for the fit occasion, but there was none ever." In the next year, one tranquil evening, I heard that he had come into the princess's palace. So I crept out of my chamber with my companion. But there were many people waiting within and without the palace, and I turned back. He must have been of the same mind with me. He had come because it was so still a night, and he returned because it was noisy. His personality was very excellent, and he was not an ordinary man. But time passed, and neither called to the other. Again, why does it sound so modern? Listen, he was a great guy, and he had a great personality, but timing was just so wrong, and then he never called. This is literally what she wrote down. Literally. In winter, though the snow had not come yet, the starlit sky was clear and cold. One whole night, I talked with those who were in the palace. And then there is a note from the translator that says, "Something seems to have occurred, which may have been her marriage to a noble of lower rank or inferior family than her own, but one can only infer this, she does not tell it." And then she goes on to say, "Like a good-for-nothing woman, I retired from the court life." I'm assuming at this time she was probably already in her 40s, so it totally makes sense for her to just leave the court. It was probably too much drama in a way. I'm actually surprised because the whole time reading this, I thought she's still very young. Like, obviously she did mention being 26, but I thought that most of the diary is like her in her 20s. But then the whole situation with the charming, mysterious, poetic guy happened when she was in her mid to late 30s. So that's a bit surprising to me, I have to say. But at the same time, it's kind of cool and it's a stark contrast to, you know, what we're used to from reading works on European culture at the time, because obviously you would just have women in their like teens and maybe 20s. And then by the age of 25, 27, you would be considered, well, an old maid, basically, and that's just how it was. So it's a tiny bit comforting that that was not the case in 11th century Japan. You could basically have a whole career as a lady-in-waiting, as a lady of court. You could, you know, thrive in royal palaces as a 30, 40, maybe even 50-year-old woman. So that's interesting. That's a cultural difference there, for sure. And I wonder whether or not her not being married for, well, a long time, I'm assuming, in an age where your fertility mattered a lot, whether that was the norm in that era, in that cultural circle. Because I actually don't know that much. Again, like, best I can do is like Jane Austen. So if anyone here is well versed in the Heian period of Japan, let us know in the comments. Anyway, this is always very sweet to realize that no matter the era, no matter the age, no matter where, humans have always been worried and fascinated by the same things, and humans have always yearned for romance, and they have always felt a bit awkward and out of place in new situations. And it's every now and then you just need a reminder, because otherwise you would just end up thinking that, wow, I'm the best humanity has ever been. And that's just not true. We gotta stay humble, you guys. If you're in a situationship, if you have a crush on a guy who's really nice and like intellectually your type, but then he never makes the move and it sort of just dissolves and you spend years yearning for that person, you may have surprisingly a lot in common with an 11th century Japanese court lady. That's all I'm gonna say. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I shall hear you in the next one. As always, don't forget to check out patreon.com/textory. We have a lot of stuff that's either related to the podcast or completely unrelated and just didn't make it to the podcast for various reasons. So go check that out. And yeah, that's all. Bye.
've thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural, because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
You know what quality feels like. You can see it in the way a fabric moves, recognize it in a flawless fit, and appreciate it in the details that make our styles unique. It's the standard Coldwater Creek has honored for over 40 years, derived from a rich Mountain West heritage and designed for today in styles that are distinctively Coldwater Creek. For a wardrobe you can count on season after season, visit coldwatercreek.com. Shop new arrivals and save 15% on purchases $75 or more with code IHEART.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.